the celebration of human performance and persistence and resilience that you see around that track, it's worth it. It's absolutely worth it.
Welcome to the Trailhead of Trail Runner Nation, where we go on virtual trail runs with smart, interesting people that help us become better runners and, heck, maybe a little bit better human beings. If this is your first time, we welcome you. Put on your shoes, lace them up, get a hydration drink, maybe a snack. How about one of those strolfuls? Is that what they're called, Freeman? Those little waffle things?
I don't know, Scott. If you're joining us for the first time, Scott has been doing this same intro for a while now, and he's getting very, very good at it. But today's topic is on Statesmas. And
what is Statesmas?
Well, I'm about to tell him, Scott.
Oh, okay.
It's when AJW flies out from the East Coast to the West Coast because Western States 100 is going down. And he marvels at the vastness of the event, and he labels it Statesmas because it's his favorite time of the year. And we're going to do some prediction on who he thinks is interesting to watch, who might win the men's and the women's race. So I'm ready to log on and learn some stuff.
It is summertime, and what's a better way to celebrate summer than a birthday party? And John G is now 10 years old. They're celebrating because they have a lot of new cool stuff in their spring-summer 22 lineup.
What John G is doing is giving 2% sales back to clean water projects in Indonesia, Java.
Why Indonesia? Because that's their spring-summer collection in 2022. It's based on the Indonesian island of Java.
John G has a lot of new trail running oriented pieces, including a new fast drying fabric called Helio and the AFO vent shorts for men and women with 5 pockets built around the seams.
You can look good, you can feel good, and you can run well by going to trailrunnernation.com, going to the deals page, scrolling down. There's a John G website that you can click on and enter the code TRN15 and get 15% off your first order at John G. Don, I know you peruse all the social media challenges, and you may have seen that Lakey launched their new branding and some of their new amazing polls that are specific for trail running.
Scott, not only do I peruse the social media sites, I use Lakey polls on every run. I just love them. It really makes a difference. I feel so confident with the extra point of contact going down the hill and some extra push going up the hill.
Not only do I like Lakey poles because of the quality and workmanship and overall features, but they're designed by trail runners.
Scott, and it starts with the Trail Shark Grip. It's just click in and go.
I was out on a run just the other day, and I stopped to talk to somebody, and I clicked out of them really quick, and they were impressed with how easy it was to click in and out.
Scott, did you tell them to go onto the trailrunnernation.com website and click on the banner on the deals page and go look at all the information about Lakey poles?
Check them out. You will not be disappointed.
Hello. Welcome to Trail Runner Nation. I'm Andy Jones Wilkins.
And I'm Don Freeman.
And I'm Scott War. And do you hear the jingle bells jingling? It's not Christmas because it's June. That is the jingle bells from Western States 100. And as we've done most of the years for the last 11 years we've been doing the podcast, we do a prognostication of Western States 100, which is going to be next weekend. And we, of course, had our good friend and Western States 100 expert, Andy Jones Wilkins, joining us to help Don and I understand who's actually running this race.
You know, Scott, you and I, we're big fans of Western States, but we are not really in the know bucket. We don't know everything and everybody that's running the race, but we love the race and love talking about it.
As I told Andy earlier before we hit record, we're fans of the trail and need to know a little bit more about the people that will be running that trail next weekend. And that's why we've invited Andy Jones Wilkins. Andy, I have one question. Before we get started with the individuals and the stories and the prognostication, Western states has, on average, 362 runners every year.
369, but this year it has 385, and it's a little complicated to explain it, but because they had a cancellation, the Forest Service has given them some extra spots, so they're going to have 385 this year, 380 next year, 375 the following year, and then be back down to their historical 369 in 4 years from now. So yes, they have a few extra spots this year.
So relatively a small race. If you were to take all the races around the world, Western States 100 is a relatively small race. Why is it such a big deal?
Well, it's old. It's been around for a long time, since 1974, 75. It's on an iconic trail, a trail that runs point to point from Olympic Valley to Auburn. And there's a mystique about the race. There's a mystique about the course, the race, the environment. For sporting people, I equate the mystique to the Augusta National Golf Course or Churchill Downs horse racing track. I mean, there are things that happen at that place that don't happen in any other place. And they can't. They can't. You know, there's a section of trail from Olympic Valley to Auburn that stretches 100 miles. And every year, you know, runners go from one point to the other. And because, Scott, as you said, it's a small race. It's a very select few who get in. There's a lottery. There's procedures for elite runners to get in and so on and so forth. It takes on a life of its own. And for anybody who's participated in the event, either as a runner, as a pacer, as a crew, as a volunteer, as someone who's part of the race administration, they get that. And that's why it's something way more than just a foot race.
And I think one of the uniquenesses, I can't think of another race that has more amazing volunteers per racer than anywhere in the world. Is it 5 volunteers for every racer or 6 volunteers for every racer? Something crazy like that.
Yeah, it's about 5 to 1, 1,300 plus number of volunteers for 369 runners. So do the math. It's incredible.
Yeah.
There are some volunteer lists. There are wait lists for people to be volunteers.
Yeah.
There's a lottery to volunteer to get into the race. And a race director's dream. A race director's dream is to have ample supply of volunteers wanting and waiting to come in.
Andy, we're in 2022. Is this year's race any different? Is there anything unique about this race that we should know?
I'd say the number one thing that's unique about this particular race, the way the field is assembled, is that there's a larger than normal number of international runners. There have been international runners in Western States for, you know, 30 years. They've prided themselves on being a global event. But as a result of the COVID, the cancellation in 2020, the option for runners to have a COVID rollover in 2021, there are a large number from as many as 25 different countries of runners who've actually been waiting since 2019 to run this race. And so whether it's at the front of the pack, the middle of the pack, the back of the pack, there are a much larger than normal international contingent in the race, which of course means a lot for the infrastructure of the race, for translators, for our good friend Bob Crowley, who does a lot of organizing of the international athletes when they come to Auburn and so forth. So I think it's going to be a real international flavor. I think there's going to be certainly an international flavor at the front of the race, but just in the entire context of it, because of this rollover, it's just going to feel a little bit more exciting and international in that way.
So if I was a 2019 runner where I learned that I was going to be running at Western States, and I decided, one, COVID decided for me, two, I decided to push out, and now I am here at 2022. Did I have to requalify? Do you know that answer? Did I have to requalify to run this year, or did my other qualifications allow me to get in?
So there was a lottery in December of 2019.
Right.
That was for the 2020 race that was canceled. So whatever they used to qualify, assuming they were qualified for the lottery that took place in 2019 for the 2020 race, their qualifier carried over to this year's race.
Wow. So I'm going to ask you, do you have any predictions on some of those folks maybe that kind of let their fitness level slip out of shape a little bit? Do you see a finisher rate change? Do you anticipate anything significant happening?
I sure hope not. It's Western States. They better have their act together.
Right.
And I think if they don't, they should drop out. Let someone on the wait list, come in. Because, I mean, look, if you ran your qualifier in 2019 and you haven't maintained your fitness and now you're at 2022, I mean, frankly, with 385 spots, you really have no business just coming to the start line and then, dropping out or missing the cutoffs at mile 24. Maybe there are going to be people who do that. But you have to imagine, I mean, this is Western States. It's the Super Bowl of ultras. You can't just show up, on a qualifier from 3 years ago and expect to do well here. So I hope that they'll come prepared. And even so, by the way, there's lots of action on the wait. Right now, to this moment, I haven't checked it, but they're down to 39 on the wait list.
Wow.
I think if you're listening to this, and you're in the top 50 on the wait list, you should be prepared to come, or you should take your name off the wait list. And we've seen this since COVID, like wait lists get, kind of run out a lot quicker than they used to. But I think if you show up at the Western States starting line and you're not adequately prepared to finish the race, I mean, shame on you, because this is such a demanding event. This is so, there's 6,600 people who want to get in. Don't do that. If you're out there listening to this right now and you're like, maybe I'll make it to Robinson Flat, please don't. Make room for someone else.
You know what I think is crazy, Scott, is that AJW isn't on a wait list. He doesn't have a bib coming, but he knows all the details about this race. And I think that's fantastic that you're that into this event.
Well, that's why we invited him on to talk about this. Let's get into some prognostications. Let's talk about the front runners for a few minutes. Who are the top runners and who should we be looking out for?
So I think this is the year that Tim Tollefson wins on the men's side.
Okay.
Tell us who Tim Tollefson is, Andy.
Tim Tollefson finished fifth last year. He is a local. He went to high school, I believe, somewhere in around where you guys live.
Rockland High School. Yep.
He grew up running these trails, and he is an internationally renowned American runner, right? He's had incredible success at UTMB in the top five, and he's a great guy, and he ran the race last year for the first time. This year, he has focused locally. He ran Way Too Cool. He ran AR50.
And won both,
and he's sticking around. He wants to get it right, and I think, if it's hot, if it's cold, if it's whatever, I think Tim is the guy to beat this year. Now, some people might say, wow, AJW, that's a pretty bold prediction. You've got, Arlen Glick, who got a course record at Javelina and won 500s last year. You've got Cody Lind, finished fourth. You've got this Adam Peterman, who won Canyons, who got a course record at JFK, who won Speed Goat. You've got Tyler Green, who was second last year. You've got Jared Hazen, who has started running this race when he was 18. This is a stacked men's field. But, of all those guys, four that have run the race before and two that are new, Arlen and Adam, I think Tim wins it. I think it'll be interesting to see how the dynamic plays out. I think Adam is probably, pound for pound, got the greatest foot speed. He hasn't done the race before. Tyler, with second place last year, knows how to, manage the Western States killing machine, if you will. Cody as well. Jared's been here a long time. Arlen Glick, he's fast. He came to the training camp, over Memorial Day and, hit some incredible splits. But I think when all's said and done, Tim's going to take it home. And I think it'll be a great celebration to have a local runner after many years of non-local runners, win the race.
And I think it's worth noting that 7 of the top 10 men are returning this year, which I'm not a historian, but I think that's a pretty high percentage of top 10ers coming back.
AJW, I've got to ask you, clue me in. What is the Western States killing machine? I think I have death by that machine somewhere, just even in training. But what is the killing machine?
Oh my gosh, Don, you are so out of it. But I'll spare Scott this comment. We'll link this in the show notes. But about 6 years ago, Joe Juhan, who I think many people listening would know Joe Juhan. He's along with me, he's a columnist at I Run Far. He wrote a 2-part article called The Western States Killing Machine on I Run Far. If you are in Western States, you should go read it right now. In the article, he talks about how Western States is unique to any other race and how it kills you with 1,000 cuts. Mm. And the reason I brought it up with respect to Tyler Green, who finished 2nd last year, is when Tyler was interviewed at the finish line, the first thing he referenced was Joe Juhan's article about the Western States killing machine. Not to belabor it too long, but the first part of the 2 parts talks about the course and how the course can just wear on you. And it looks so easy and it looks like you can just crush it and how it just wears you down. The 2nd part talks about the people who have proven that's not the case. He starts with an analogy of a buffet, a huge, like all you can eat buffet that you might find on a cruise ship or something. And all these people come in and just start gorging themselves on all kinds of food from the buffet. And then the crowd parts and people come in like Tim Tweetmeyer and Ann Trason and Nikki Kimball. And they go to the buffet and they take a little bite of this and a little bite of that. And they just make their way through the buffet. And ultimately, when they get to the end of the buffet, they have lots of room left for dessert. And of course, the analogy is when you get to the last 20 miles of Western States, you want to eat that dessert. So what Tyler Green did last year is he crossed the river and went up to Green Gate and it was like game on. And he crushed the competition. So that, in a long nutshell, is the Western States killing machine. And I'm sure Scott's going to put it in the show notes.
Of course.
Oh, absolutely, he will. But I've got to ask you this now. What are the advantages of running this race before? You mentioned that as in part of your explanation of who's going to do well at the race, that running this a 2nd or 3rd time or being there the last year. Let's talk about that advantage of first-timers versus multi-time runners.
I think it gives you basically a 50% chance of doing better, right? So it's like, I think once you've run this race once, so you take those guys, Cody and Tyler's run it twice, or they have a 50% chance of doing better than like my other two guys, Peterman and Arlen Glick. Like on paper, Arlen Glick and Adam Peterman are probably like at the talent level of Tim and Cody and Tyler, but they haven't run the race before. I mean, I think back. I mean, let's just go back to 2010, a great like landmark race in the history of Western States, which J.B. Benham made a movie about, an Unbreakable. You had Jeff Rose, Anton Krupicka, Killian Jornet, and Hal Koerner, right? And they were the top 4. Everyone thought they were going to be the top 4. And wouldn't you know it, Hal Koerner ends up dropping out, and those three other guys who were running it for the first time were the top 3. They set course records. I mean, the rest is history, right? It fueled the running, the ultra trail running boom. But aside from that year, when 3 newbies like crushed it, the chances of a brand new, never run Western States before person winning the race is 50% less than somebody who's run the race before winning it.
And I think that story holds true even with the great Ann Trason, who has 14 wins her first time wasn't as successful as her legend ended up telling.
Yep, she dropped out twice, and so did Tim Tweetmeyer, dropped out once before he started his long string of 25.
Mm. They learned about the Western States killing machine. Hey, AJW, with your permission, before we go to the women's field, let's go to intriguing stories, because there's always some gold inside of your intriguing stories. And then we'll finish up with the women.
Well, we've talked about the international runners, and I think that's just intriguing because there's going to be just this international flavor around the race that, I mean, we've always had it, but I think we're going to feel it a little bit more. We're going to feel it around Olympic Valley when the race starts. We're going to feel it at the aid stations. We're going to feel it in ways that really make Western States a global event. I also think, and I think this is an important piece, over the last several years, because of the way the lotteries unfolded, because of the popularity of Western States, more than 80% of the people who are going to be starting the race on June 25th have never finished Western States before. So 4 out of 5 people who are going to be going down the trail have never done the race before.
Wow.
Some of them, unless they came to Memorial Day training camp, they've never seen the course before, which means their crews have never driven these roads, which means their pacers don't know what it's like. There's a whole lot of unknown out there. This really is a once-in-a-lifetime experience for people. And the way the lottery is designed, the way ultra-marathoning has evolved in this country and the world, I mean, 80%. So just 311 as of today, 311 of the starters, of the 385 starters, have zero finishes at Western States.
Hmm.
I mean, that, I think, isn't... It's not a specific story, but I think it means there are 311 stories that are going to unfold on that day, and we have no idea how they're going to work out. And it's going to be, to me, it's fascinating. That part of it is fascinating. And then you have 260 and over runners in the race this year, both of which are fascinating stories. The first one is Jim Howard. For old Western States veterans, Jim Howard has 4 finishes. His first one was in 1978. He has 1 win. It was in 1983. And he's returning to the race at the age of 67 to finish it again on 2 artificial knees. And if he finishes, it will be the longest period of time between a first finish and a most recent finish of anybody who's even ever done the race, including Gordy. It would be 44 years between the first time he finished in 1978 and his finish in 2022. I think that's just fascinating. He was out of the sport for a while. He did other things. He did a 17-hour 100K at Canyons. So he can do it. He has the physical fortitude to do it. But we'll see. I love that stuff.
And he brings in that variable of knowing the course very, very well. He knows when to hold back, when to put it on, when to make time or save time.
And what I would be fascinated to be in Jim Howard's head is, how does he translate his 23-year-old self the first year in 1978 to his 67-year-old self? And because many of these sections of the course are exactly the same. And he might say to him, he might get to the bottom of Deadwood Canyon and look at his watch and say, oh my God, it took me 40 minutes to get down here. It took me 22 minutes when I was 23. Or does he say, I'm just happy to be down here. I'm on the Western States course. I'm running the Western States 100. And this is what it's all about. I think if Jim Howard manages to finish the Western States 100 and circles that track, it will be one of the most electric moments. It would be right up there with Gunhild Swanson's finish in 2015 and right up there with, you know, Jim Walmsley's course record on the other end of the spectrum. This is a phenomenal story and I think one that deserves to be told. When Jim Howard was running you know, step for step with Jim King in those early years, and Wide World of Sports was covering the race and there were helicopters overhead. I mean, that was a completely different world, a world in which many of the people in ultra running right now have no familiarity with at all. But he did it. He was in the arena and he's coming back again. And it's, I mean, I just can't wait to see it unfold.
Hey, Andy, I just was looking. There's over 20 racers that are over the age of 60 that are running this race. And many of them have never finished this race. I think that's pretty amazing. This sport just inspires me as I get older that you can continue to do it. And one of those racers we just had on last week with our Training Principles episode, which is Megan Canfield. And this is her 13th or 14th try?
13th.
13th.
Yeah, so that's my other intriguing story. Megan is 61. She has 12 finishes and has gained entry into the race through the Silver Legend, which is part of a legacy to Greg Soderlund, which saves a spot in the race for a runner who's 60 years of age and older, who's given significantly to the sport and specifically to Western States. And Megan, quite deservingly, is this year's recipient. Megan also is a badass runner. So the story is, I mean, she's got 9 top tens. She's still running and beating age group records at flat and fast road stuff and like world 100K teams and things like this. But as a 61-year-old, she's got a couple things I would imagine in her sight. First of all, the 60 and over course record, which is 23 hours and change, held by the current Western States Board President, Diana Fitzpatrick, a few years ago. No disrespect to Diana, but I think Megan's going to crush that. I mean, I think Megan is thinking 24 hours would be her like C goal. I think more interestingly, I want to go rewind the clock a little bit to 2011, when Megan was within 7 minutes of Doug Latimer's legendary 50 and over course record for men, which at the time was 1843. It's since been broken by Stephen Moore. But Megan has the 50 and over women's record at 1850, which she just ran a couple of years ago. So you can see why, you know, 23 and change wouldn't be a big deal for Megan. So I think one of the other iconic course records that exists right now is Roger Delors' male 60 and over record, which is 20 hours and 36 minutes. And I have to imagine that Megan has her eyes on that. I think Megan in a normal year is thinking she could run 20 hours, you know, probably it would be a stretch, but you know, 6.5 hours to Robinson Flat, 6.5 hours to Forest Hill, and you know, 7 hours to the finish. I think Megan's going to do that, and you heard it here first. She will end up being the overall 60 and over course record holder by the end of the day on June 26th.
There's a lot of things to watch during a race, AJW, just not who comes in first, but you've got all these other stories unfolding that keep you occupied and interested.
Hey, Andy, one of the things, and maybe this can cue in a little bit of a discussion, I just counted there's 11 runners that got in the lottery this year that had 128 tickets in the lottery. And only one of those people have ever run the race. So there's how many years does it take to accumulate 128 tickets? Do you do the Common Core math on that for me, Headmaster?
They were in it for 8 years. So they were in the lottery for 8 years. This is their 9th year. So they got in. They were 8-time losers.
Yeah, that is a long, long time to qualify and put in and qualify and put in. I think they have the patience of Job. Do you think that patience is possibly going to pay off on the course?
I sure as hell hope so. I mean, if you worked that hard that long to get into this race,
right?
I really hope whether those people hired a coach or you know, quit their job or whatever they did. If you wait that long to do something, you've got to get it done.
That may be tougher than running the race.
Exactly. And what I would say to those people, if they're listening, is what, I mean, you've done it up to this point. Just now enjoy the journey, put the cherry on top, get the race done, and, you know, savor every minute of it, especially, you know, those last couple of miles, because it's just incredible. And yeah, it's hard to think about people waiting that long and putting in the qualifiers. And I mean, it's frustrating. I get that. But again, the celebration of human performance and persistence and resilience that you see around that track, it's worth it. It's absolutely worth it.
I think waiting that long to get into this race, and really for anybody that's in it, if you're lucky enough to get in early, or you had to wait 128 tickets, you need to take care of yourself all the way through, because the chances of getting to do it again are small. And so when you're trying to make the decision going up a hill, do I take myself out or not? I'm really tired. You've got to put that to the side. You just have to get it done and take care of yourself. The resolve to finish is higher. It's a, you know, for many, one in a lifetime opportunity. So you've just got to do it.
And I think that's really part of why we've seen a trending up. I mean, last year was a really hot year. And there was the COVID issue from the previous year that impacted people's training. But we have seen a gradual climb of finishers rates at Western States. And I think it is because of this once in a lifetime opportunity. If you remove the elites, right, and the, let's just say there are 40 elite runners, and they might drop out because they're going to save themselves for another day and they could qualify and do something. But if you remove those and you take the other 320, they're sitting there saying, I'm at Western States. I'm going to finish this thing. I'm going to put in my best effort. But if I have to readjust my goals, if I have to, you know, sit in this aid station for 15 minutes and cool off, whatever it takes, I'm going to do it, because I want to circle that track and cross that finish line, because this may be the only time I get to do it.
Yeah. Are there any other inspiring stories or people that we should put on our bingo card as we're preparing for Western States that we should be watching during the day?
Aside from Jim and Megan, I mean, there's not a lot in the way of like sort of historic, you know, celebratory stories. But I wrote an article that's coming out this Friday about the 2010 Western States that I really think was something that propelled the sport forward, ultimately because J.B. Benna made the film Unbreakable that came out in 2011. And for those that don't recall that race, we had Jeff Rose and Anton Krupicka and Killian Jornet, like names in the sport that really, you know, revolutionized, you know, kind of went, brought the sport beyond just the niche world. And Dan Barger ran the race that year and finished 10th place. Well, Dan Barger is still running Western States, and he's coming back for his 13th finish, and he's in his late 50s now, and he's kind of the last man standing from that 2010 group. I was part of it, but I think that'll be an interesting story to see how Dan does. And Dan, interestingly, did a Western States 200 during COVID, where he ran from Auburn up to Olympic Valley and back. He tried it once and got too sleep deprived, and then did it again and made it. So, you know, I think Dan is probably a third interesting story, along with Jim and Megan.
Don, it's what's inside that counts, right?
Well, you know, there's going to be a lot of runners at Western States this year that are looking inside deep to get them up some of those canyon climbs.
InsideTracker.com. They're the ones that take blood samples. They come to your house. They come to your work. They do a blood sample and then analyze the blood, tell you where you're deficient, where you're good, and then go the next step. It's easy to do the first part. The next step is they develop a plan that will improve where you're deficient and keep you accountable to that plan.
You can do all the right things at the dinner table, on the trail, but if you don't know what's going on inside of you, you could be missing something that's very important and crucial to your progress.
Go to insidetracker.com, or you can go to the link on our deals page, select the plan that you think fits you, and you can get 20% off whatever plan you select by going to our deals page at trailrunnernation.com. Scroll down, and there is a link that you click on, and you'll get 20% off that plan. Okay, so now let's get into the women's field. And just by looking, you know, Casey Lichtig, who is in the elite field, this is her eighth time at Western States. You got to love the, what is her nickname? The something pixie, right? The cheerful pixie, or what is it?
Pixie Ninja.
Pixie Ninja. I knew there were, I got half of it right. What about the women's field? How deep is that? And what do we expect?
Women's field is interesting. You know, as with the men, defending champion is not coming back. So we know Jim Walmsley is not coming back on the men's side, and Beth Pascal is not coming back on the women's side. And we recently learned that Courtney DeWalter, who had gained entry through her win at UTMB, has also decided not to come back. So it's kind of wide open. I divide the sort of front runners into two groups. We've got sort of the tried and true Western States veterans, and then, you know, at least in this case, kind of one newcomer who might eventually break through. Camille Herron is arguably the most decorated and fast, just straight up fast, you know, ultra marathon woman in the world right now. You know, she can run, you know, 170 miles on the track in 24 hours. She can break records at 100 miles. She finished Western States last year, but she has not nailed a hard 100 miler in her career. She did win the Javelina 100 in October, going away in a course record time, 14 hours and change. So I've got to think, and she was out at the Memorial Day training camp, I've got to think Camille is thinking about how she can possibly win this race. Behind her, or along with her, my pick for the win is Brittany Peterson. Again, kind of sort of sticking to locals. Brittany has been on our podcast before. She has a second and fourth place finish at Western States. Her significant other is Cody Lind, part of the long-standing Lind legacy at Western States. And I think third time is the charm for Brittany. Ruth Croft, who finished second last year, New Zealand runner, super strong. It'll be interesting. Hasn't raced much. Will be interesting to see how she plays out. Same with Keely Henninger, who was one of those runners who surprised everybody last year, having never run the race before. And then Katie Asmuth, who's been crushing it in the high mountains, and Emily Hawgood. So I think that's my top six. I think there's going to be a lot of dynamic in the front. I think in contrast to other years, it's not going to be reckless in the front unless Camille completely takes off. You mentioned Casey. You know, Casey had a major surgery repairing her hamstring back in, I believe it was November, December, and has pretty much focused her entire rehab on getting back in time for Western States. She wants nothing more than to get that coveted 1,000-mile buckle. And I think she's going to do it, you know, and she could sneak up on some of these ladies, as could some of the golden ticket winners from previous races. But I think the women's field is dynamic. I think it's fun. But I think whatever Camille does is going to ultimately dictate what the rest of the women do. And I think ultimately Brittany is going to come out on top.
You know, often AJW, I have heard, Western States is a downhill course. And Western States, I don't think, is a downhill course. I think if you look at where it starts and where it ends, there's some down there. You can see that the elevation is lower than where it starts. But it is a hilly climbing race. You can't go in thinking, This is a downhill, fast, well-groomed course. There's areas of it that are somewhat technical. There are areas of it that will make you wish you did more climbing and hill preparation. There, it's not a downhill fast course. So someone like Camille with foot speed, it may seem like a sound like a perfect fit, but it's one that needs someone that can climb too. I'm not saying she can't climb.
It's also sneaky. The course, especially after Forest Hill, there, you know, everyone says, oh, it's all runnable after, but there's some sneaky climbs that if you're just like, oh, thank God, I'm just going all the way downhill to the river, and you're not mentally prepared for those, like little kickers, I mean, it can crush you. I mean, I remember Dave Mackey, you know, the year he chased down Scott Jurek, Scott Jurek got the course record. Dave got second in 2004. But he was like, man, those little climbs on the way down to the river killed me. And you know, like you said, you look at the elevation profile and it's like down, 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 down. But just a little, you know, 50 to 100 foot climb that sort of crushes your momentum at a time when you've been going for 10 hours or so, that can have an impact on you. And those things sneak up on you at Western States all the time. And that's part of why, going back to your point, Scott, about having run the race before, I think if you've run the race before, you at least know those things are coming. And to Joe Juhan's Western States killing machine, those are the things that ultimately kill you.
Yeah, and another one of those small cuts that you can get is what seems innocent enough to run along the river. Once you finally get there, there's an area called Sandy Bottom. And all races have their little nuances, right?
Right.
But when you all of a sudden start running through this sand course with all kinds of humidity around you, it sucks the life out of you, what you have left. And that's at what mile? I don't know what mile. 80-ish.
It's like 78 and a half or so, 76 to 70. It's a tiny little part,
yeah.
But it's humid. It's sandy. It's freaking filled with poison oak. it's miserable down there. Oh, and then by the way, when you get out of it, you get on the road and you have to go uphill again.
That's right.
You're like, the river's right here. Why am I going uphill again?
Because ultimately, at that aid station you're going to, it's at the river. So, you know, why am I climbing?
You know, I have to say, I don't. How many miles is it? Once you reach Sandy Bottoms to the river crossing, it's what, 3 miles, maybe?
Barely. I mean, it's probably two, but it seems like 20.
It's the longest section of the course because you say, I finally got to the river. I should be crossing now. And you're trudging through the sand. And like you say, then you finally come to a road and you go, I got to go up to get to the river crossing.
It's terrible. Like the river's right there. Why am I going this way? It's terrible, but it's part of the killing machine, right? It's part of what does it to you. And like, well, I guess I got to go up this road. But if it gets in your head, if you're like, okay, thank God we're at the river, we're going to cross soon. And then it's like, half an hour later, you're still not there. I mean, that's rough.
Yeah.
And this speaks to really all racers and all courses and local knowledge and hooking up with a pacer that might have that local knowledge. Hey, we're here, but we've got to go through this. Or to do the research and reconnaissance yourself by reading and looking, and just knowing the course makes everybody a better runner.
I would agree to that. And even zooming out further, it is important to understand it's human nature for us to think, oh my God, the worst is over. And I think we need to understand that, hey, you know what? The worst is maybe never completely over. Like, it can always get worse. And whether it's running ultras or living life and the best of us are like prepared for when the worst comes. And I don't mean like, you know, jumping off a cliff or something, but like when the worst comes, we're prepared to address it. And that little, I mean, it's funny that we've zeroed in on this little like half mile section of the Western States course, but it can absolutely, I mean, look at Scott's like, oh my God, it's miserable down there. Like, it can really get in your head. And the minute you let something get in your head, you're done.
Oh, we can make a full list of all of the spots that could kill you on Western States on the killing machine, but we've just looked at one that you may have overlooked that'll still get you. You know, it's Sandy Bottom. And yeah, right. And when you think you've made it through the Devil's Thumb Climb and all the rest of them that you've heard tell about, there's the quiet little Sandy Bottom that's waiting to take care of the rest.
And I will tell you, when I was running, by the time I got to Sandy Bottoms, first of all, my feet were blisters, full-on blisters, all the whole foot. And then you get to Sandy Bottoms, and if you're not wearing some gaiters, even if you are, you're going to get some of that sand in there. You have some sandpaper working on you. It's not a fun section. You want to leave that section behind for sure.
Oh, man, that must have been miserable.
And there it is, you know, AJW and Scott too. This is the Western States that we get excited about, right? Because we know all these little stories. We've heard them. We've either run part of it in training or just listened to podcasts like this where people talking about it. It's what makes all races super special. You know, it's part of our sport, and it'll be fun to share Western States with those with zero finishes so far because they haven't run it yet. They're going to get to experience it.
And Andy is flying out, as he always does, across the country to come and celebrate this race. It's Christmas for Andy. There's many other people that have this affinity for the race that just gather at Western States. If you're around the area within driving range and you haven't experienced it, boy, come out to the Auburn track and the Placer High School track. And just enjoy. It is one of the greatest athletic events I've ever been to. And I enjoy just watching all the runners, especially the Golden Hour. Andy, we did a 30-hour Western States podcast where we broadcast for 30 hours straight. And my favorite part was watching you during the Golden Hour. Can you explain what the Golden Hour is for those people who don't know?
I'd love to. And by the way, thank you guys for indulging me, my obsession with Western States. But you know, over the years, as the race has become more popular, as it's become more accessible, because there is a belief that we want the Western States is egalitarian. You can run a flat 100-miler as a qualifier and come to Western States and give it your best shot. But we've seen, especially over the last 6-7 years, perhaps the largest percentage of finishers of the entire race finish between hour 29 and hour 30, which is now affectionately known as the Golden Hour. And these are runners that have been out there, you know, for overnight and into the next day. So they're dealing with the heat for a second day. Maybe they're fighting cutoffs. But they eventually get up to the top of Roby Point. They climb the pavement one more time. They get to mile 99, where there's usually a party going on. They can meet all of their crew and all of their pacers and triumphantly run down the streets of Auburn into the Placer High School track and around the track and to the finish. It gets a little stressful around 10:30 on the clock. For someone running at that pace, it probably takes 20 minutes to run from Roby Point to the finish. It's 1.3 miles, and you're not running a lot of it, and you know, you've been out there for a long time. And one of the beauties of what has happened, especially in the last 6 or 7 years, is the entire town of Auburn comes out. The volunteers, the people who live along the course, the people who are just fans of the race. And as it gets closer to 11 a.m. on Sunday, the fourth Sunday in June, it just the excitement becomes palpable. And you typically, Tim Tweetmeyer, 25-time finisher, board member of Western States, been part of the race since the early 80s, typically dons his cutoff t-shirt around the 29-hour mark, jogs out, and meets the horses. For those of you who don't know, there are horses who chase in the last finishers. They're basically going along at the pace that you would have to go to get a 30-hour finish. Tweetmeyer goes, meets the horses, says hi to them, then turns around and looks at the runners and says, "You guys got to run." And at that point, it's game on. And you can feel the energy rise in the track. You can feel the crowd gathering. The winner usually comes back. People who finish in the top 10. At the end of the day, as John Medinger, who's been the longtime announcer at the race, he's like, you gotta love a sport where the last place finisher gets louder applause than the first place finisher. Mm. And that's what you see in the golden hour.
You know, I hate to interrupt that great climax description of the golden hour. I've heard when Tim Tweetmeyer goes out and meets the horses and then starts pacing these final runs through, I heard the stick is bigger than the carrot. Does he have a whip? Is he back there poking them? Can Tim be a cattle driver?
You know, I have a lot of history with Tim, as I know you guys do too. Yeah. Yeah. Tim's a great guy. There's no doubt about it, but he can be a real jerk. I know this very well as you know, I've come across Western States finish lines and he said to me, "Here's your medal. What took you so long?" You know, so that guy, you know, you don't, let's just put it this way. As much as Tim is like an icon of Western States, if you're still running the race and Tim comes down in his little cutoff t-shirt at Roby Point, you're not going to have a good time over those next 20 minutes. He's probably going to get you to the finish, but it's not going to be fun.
Oh, gosh, I am excited for this race. We're sitting here a week before the race. Western States has done a really good job. You can follow on ultralive.net. There's also a live broadcast that they started last year. I think last year was the first year. And so you can watch it live. Just go out and enjoy it. It sure is a lot of fun. And we should say, we're focusing on Western States here. Most races are just as exciting and just as fun. We just picked this one because Don and I live near the finish line. We love having Andy on because he's so passionate about it. And we hope that you too can find a little bit of excitement in this small race in Northern California.
And we want to remind people they can read some of AJW's musings right there on I Run Far, and where he covers a lot of this. And so there's more to read and to learn from AJW.
I just want to add too that you know, Don and Scott, when you guys started this podcast, you know, now 11 going on 12 years ago, you know, and this notion of a trail runner nation, I mean, a lot of it was inspired by what takes place around this race. And while you guys are absolutely right, there are way more races. Nobody out there needs to put all their eggs in one Western States basket. But the culture of Trail Runner Nation, the culture of what it means to be part of a community, what it means to be, you know, a part of something greater than oneself. You see that. It's palpable at Western States. Like, you know, there's nothing about the Western States 100 that's about any one person, that's about any one idea, that's about any... It's about bringing people together about a shared love of something. Even people who've stopped running, you know, who don't run anymore for injury or for age or for every reason, they still come out. You know, every year when I go to Michigan Bluff, I mean, there's a dozen people there who probably have 50 silver buckles between them. They don't run anymore, but they come to Michigan Bluff every year to be there and take in the environment of Western States. So it's about the nation. It's about the culture. It's about who we are and what we love to be. And Western States is a vehicle for that, but it's not the only vehicle. And it's certainly something that, you know, I think is a model for other events and other ideas that are what make our sport truly special and I think truly transcendent for a lot of people.
Beautifully stated, AJW. And with that, go out and run.
Mas.
And now we've reached the end of the podcast, really the finish line, Scott, where we give high fives as we're coming through the big arch. And we're going to thank our executive producer and editor, Ryan Warr.
And our social media guru, Yana Gibalova.
And our website graphic engineer, Katie Burke.
We also want to thank the Patreon supporters. If you want to become one, you can go to our website, hit the Support Us tab, and you can sign up on our Patreon channel. We also want to thank our business Patreon member, Doug Crumley. Doug Crumley is a coach for your finances. He is a private wealth advisor with Crumley & Associates, which is a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, LLC. When you have the right financial advisor, life can be brilliant. Visit him at www.dougcrumleyjr.com.
Scott, we mentioned the deals page quite often. That's on our website, trailrunnernation.com. And we've made a lot of changes there, and we're really proud of it.
There's a lot of information there. Of course, there's the deals page where you can get all sorts of discounts on gear that we love and trust. We also have all of our other podcasts. We also have the Training Principles link. So we just started the Training Principles episodes at the beginning of this year. All those are kind of organized in one area. So if you're just getting into trail running and want to know the basics of where to start, go to the Training Principles tab. You can also sign up for our newsletter. We don't fill your mailbox full of junk every week or twice a week. Only when there's important things to happen, you'll also be notified when a new podcast hits the air.
So go to trailrunnernation.com.